Okay, so let's dive into this one.
Yeah.
Imagine being trapped, in this terrifying situation, constantly fearing for your life, and then one desperate act leads to this tragic outcome, and you're suddenly the one facing a murder charge. This is State v. Kelly, a case that really changed how courts view self-defense, especially for women in abusive relationships.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about this case is that, it wasn't just about legal arguments. It was about the psychology of domestic violence and how the legal system, back then wasn't really equipped to handle that.
Exactly. And we have got a lot to unpack here. We've got the actual legal briefs, we've got expert analysis, we even have some snippets from the judges' opinions. Like a real treasure trove for anyone who wants to really understand, this landmark decision.
Absolutely.
And I think we're gonna explore not just the law here, but the human story behind it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a story that starts with a tragedy. Gladys and Onis Kelly, they had this 7-year marriage, but it was marked by violence. And things kind of escalated to a point where Gladys, in a moment of desperation, stabbed Ernest with a pair of scissors. He died. She was charged with murder.
Okay, so I'm already seeing red flags.
Right.
7 years of abuse. Why didn't she just leave?
Right.
I mean, isn't that what any reasonable person would do?
Well, that's where the case gets really interesting, and that's where this whole concept of reasonableness gets thrown into question. Because, see, Gladys's defense was self-defense, but the trial court initially barred expert testimony on something called battered woman syndrome, or BWS.
Wait, hold up. What is BWS? And why was this so crucial to her defense?
So BWS, it describes this pattern of psychological and behavioral symptoms that can develop from prolonged domestic abuse. It kind of explains why someone might stay in an abusive relationship, why they might perceive threats differently, why leaving isn't always as simple as it seems.
Okay, so I'm starting to see how this could be important for the jury to understand, but why would the court even block that testimony? It seems like such a key piece of the puzzle.
Well, at the time, BWS was a relatively new concept in the legal world. And some judges, they were hesitant to admit this type of expert testimony. They feared that it was too subjective or that it could be misused.
Wouldn't that put Gladys at a major disadvantage? I mean, how could a jury possibly understand her actions without knowing, the context of her abuse?
That's a great point. And that's exactly what the New Jersey Supreme Court ultimately decided. They ruled that expert testimony on BWS was admissible in these self-defense cases, and they stated that without it, the jury would be making a judgment in the dark.
Wow, that is huge. That's like a total game changer.
It is.
It seems like this ruling finally acknowledged that the law can't just, stay blind to the psychological realities of abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. The court basically said that, that reasonable person standard that we use in self-defense cases needs to be re-examined when we're dealing with domestic violence.
Okay, so let's dig into that. What exactly is this reasonable person standard, and how does BWS challenge it?
So the traditional self-defense argument hinges on the idea that you're only justified in using force if you're in imminent danger. And the reasonable person standard asks, would a reasonable person in the defendant's shoes have believed that their life was in danger?
I see where the problem is here. Someone who hasn't experienced years of abuse might not understand, why Gladys felt so threatened, even if Ernest wasn't, physically attacking her at that exact moment.
Exactly. And that's where the Kelly case really gets interesting. It forced the courts to acknowledge that this reasonable person standard, it often failed to account for, the very real and terrifying effects of this prolonged domestic violence. And that's where things get really interesting. We're going to talk about
But
all
think
the different ways that BWS can impact a person,
let's do it.
their perceptions and actions.
Let's get into it. So basically, this case argued that, what's reasonable for a woman living with, constant abuse is different from someone who's never experienced that kind of fear and trauma.
And to illustrate that point, let's kind of dive into some of the specific ways that BWS can actually impact, someone's perceptions and actions.
Okay, yeah, give us the nitty-gritty.
So one of the key aspects of BWS is this idea of learned helplessness.
Okay.
So, you might ask, like, why didn't she just leave?
Right.
But years of abuse can really erode a person's self-worth and their belief in their ability to escape. They may feel completely powerless, trapped in a situation they just see no way out of.
So it's almost like their spirit's been broken. Like their ability to fight back has been just systematically dismantled.
Yeah, that's a really powerful way to put it. And then you have the cycle of abuse, you know, the tension building, the explosion of violence, followed by, you know, a period of remorse and reconciliation. And this cycle can repeat for years, you know, creating this really warped sense of normalcy and making it even harder for the victim to break free.
It's heartbreaking to think that someone could become almost accustomed to that kind of terror. You know, it's like living in a constant state of high alert.
Yeah, and that leads to another key symptom of BWS, which is hypervigilance.
Okay.
You know, where the victim is always on edge, always standing for danger, interpreting even neutral actions as potential threats. You know, imagine living like that, never knowing when the next attack might come.
I'm starting to understand why Gladys Kelly might have felt like she had no other choice. You know, like she was acting in self-defense, even if her husband wasn't physically assaulting her at that exact moment. It's like, her past experience has created this constant underlying threat.
Right. And that's exactly what the New Jersey Supreme Court recognized.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't say that Gladys was innocent, but they did say that the jury needed to hear this expert testimony on BWS to understand, you know, the full context of her actions.
But hold on a second. Didn't this ruling kind of open up a can of worms? I mean, couldn't any defendant now claim past trauma to justify violence? Wouldn't this basically give people a get out of jail free card?
Yeah, that was definitely a concern that was raised by critics of the ruling. But, you know, it's important to understand what the court actually said. They didn't say that BWS automatically justifies the use of deadly force. You know, they simply stated that the jury needs to have the full picture, including this understanding of the psychological dynamics of abuse before they make a judgment.
So it's more about leveling the playing field, you know, ensuring a fair trial where the jury can weigh all the evidence, including this expert testimony on, you know, the invisible scars of abuse.
Yeah.
It's not about excusing the violence, but understanding the context in which it occurred.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You know, the Kelly case didn't create a loophole. It illuminated a blind spot in the legal system.
Okay, that makes sense. But this wasn't just about Gladys Kelly. Was it? This ruling had much broader implications.
Yeah.
So what was the lasting impact of Steve v. Kelly?
I mean, this case really sent shockwaves through the legal system. It became a landmark decision, setting a precedent for courts all over the country to consider the psychological impact of domestic abuse in these self-defense cases.
So other states started adopting, you know, similar approaches, recognizing that the reasonable person standard needed to be adjusted in cases where BWS was a factor.
Yeah, but it wasn't a smooth or immediate process.
Right.
You know, the Kelly ruling sparked this intense debate and a wave of legal challenges. You know, some states embraced the precedent while others resisted it.
It sounds like this case really opened up like a Pandora's box of legal and ethical questions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It forced us to confront some really uncomfortable truths about the limitations of the law, you know, and it continues to shape legal thinking even today.
And this raises an important question. How do we ensure that this type of expert testimony is being used responsibly?
Yeah.
How do we prevent, you know, the BWS defense from being misused or even fabricated?
Well, that's where things get really tricky. It's a delicate balance. For starters, you know, the courts have established these really rigorous standards for expert witnesses.
Right.
So, you know, not just anyone can walk in and claim to be an expert on BWS. They need to have extensive credentials, years of experience in the field, a proven track record.
Right. So it's not enough to have, you know, just read a few articles online or seen a couple of documentaries.
Yes.
These experts need to have like real in-depth knowledge.
Absolutely. And they need to be able to present their testimony in a clear, objective, and scientifically sound manner. You know, the goal is to educate the jury, not to try to sway them emotionally.
Right. That makes sense. But even with those safeguards in place, there's always a risk.
Right.
Right. I mean, people lie. Experts can be biased. Evidence can be manipulated. How do we ensure that the system isn't being gamed?
Yeah, it's an ongoing challenge and there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately it comes down to a combination of factors. The integrity of the legal professionals involved, the rigor of the judicial process, and the vigilance of, you know, everyone who's involved in seeking justice.
So it's a shared responsibility. Mm-hmm. Lawyers need to be ethical, judges need to be discerning, and the system needs to be constantly evolving to address, you know, new challenges and potential loopholes.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, and that's what makes this whole area of law so fascinating and so important. It's not just about applying rules, you know, it's about grappling with these complex human issues and ensuring that the law serves its intended purpose to protect the innocent and to ensure fairness for all.
And Steve v. Kelly really pushed the boundaries of that conversation. You know, it forced us to look beyond the surface to acknowledge these hidden traumas that can really shape a person's actions.
What's so fascinating about this case is that it didn't offer a simple solution, you know,
right.
a black and white answer. It opened the door to this, you know, more nuanced, informed understanding of domestic violence and its impact on the legal system.
And it's still so relevant today, isn't it? I mean, we're still struggling with these same issues. How to balance the rights of the accused with the safety and protection of victims, how to ensure fairness while acknowledging, you know, the complexities of human behavior.
Absolutely. The Kelly case was a watershed moment, but it wasn't the end of the story, you
right.
know. It was the beginning of a much larger and ongoing conversation about the role of psychology in law, you know, the
yeah.
challenges of expert testimony and the evolution of that reasonable person standard.
It makes you think, if prolonged abuse can really distort someone's sense of danger, how do we assess their actions? Where do we draw the line in these self-defense cases? And how do we ensure that the legal system is both just and compassionate?
Those are tough questions and ones that we're still grappling with today.
Yeah.
But the Kelly case was a crucial step in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, it forced us to acknowledge those invisible scars of abuse, to consider the psychological context of a crime, and to strive for a more nuanced and equitable application of justice.
It's a reminder that the law isn't static. It's a living, breathing entity that needs to adapt to, you know, our evolving understanding of the world and the human experience.
Well said. And cases like State v. Kelly, they continue to challenge us to think critically, to question our assumptions, and to strive for a justice system that is truly fair and compassionate for all.
This has been a truly enlightening deep dive. Thanks for walking us through this complex and important case. And to our listeners, we hope this has given you a deeper understanding of State v. Kelly and its lasting impact on the legal landscape. Until next time.